Good morning. Thank you for your patience. The first two cases had more than one appellant, so we're a little more generous than the rules would require, but I think that's important when there are multiple parties arguing, so we appreciate your patience with our delay this morning. The last case on the court's calendar for oral argument this morning is State versus Walls. We're ready for argument. Would you each state your name for the record before beginning your argument?
May it please the court. My name is Devee Axelson. I represent the appellant Jordan Walls. Mr. Walls' convictions must be overturned because they're the product of an unconstitutional search of the car that he was driving. At the time that the inventory search took place in this case, the only information that Officer Murr had was that Mr. Walls had been involved in a one-car accident and that he was not the owner of the vehicle. That information was deficient based on both the Hastings Police Department's impoundment policy and based on Goodrich and other cases by this court and the Supreme Court on what is required before the police can take custody of a car and conduct an inventory search.
So just as you begin your argument, I just want to make sure we're clear on what the record is here, Mr. Axelson, both for the district court and for our review. Is the record the testimony of the officer and the stipulated body cam and the stipulated policy?
Yes.
That's what the district court had before to make a decision, and that's what's before this court.
Correct. And I don't know that I make this particularly clear in my brief. I think the state acknowledges this in their brief, but it is clear when you watch the video camera, before I get into the clearly erroneous finding, but also based on the video camera, the information that Officer Murr has, she arrives on the scene at about 11:04. She approaches the car around 11:05. She ends up getting the insurance information because at 11:06:24, you can see she has an Allstate insurance card in her possession. At about 11:11, she's talking to another officer and she says, they don't own the car. I guess I'm going to have to inventory it, or that's the conversation back and forth with the officer. At that point, she doesn't have any conversation with my client regarding who he received the car from, this Nemo person. That's a conversation that happens far after the inventory
search. And we understand
that.
We watched the video. But, you know, I keep looking at the Hastings Police Department towing policy, and there's a provision under 510.22, which I know you're very, very familiar with. And the second provision says if the owner is incapacitated, and this is not the owner, I agree, but then it says, or for any reason it is necessary for the department to assume responsibility. My review of the video indicated, well, the passenger seemed to be very distraught and upset, but it seemed as if the driver was dazed. So wouldn't that have been enough for the or for any reason it's necessary for the department to assume responsibility? I mean, that's my question.
Well, my answer would be that the judge doesn't make a finding that the driver is dazed. I think all the
police officer does, and that what part of the evidence that came in is this video.
He is answering questions of the officer other than the one thing that's disputed by the parties. I mean, he's answering questions about what's going on when she first approaches the car. He's able to provide his driver's license, although it is revoked.
And he doesn't live in the area, so he presumably has no information about who a towing company would be. I mean, you would agree with that.
Well, I don't think that's the standard, though. I think if you look at Goodrich, there's none of that is discussed.
What does or for any reason mean?
Well, even if the towing policy, I would say that the towing policy says that you're supposed to give the driver the option. That's the first part of that towing policy.
Correct. But then it goes on to say, or for any reason.
Well,
and that's a disjunctive compared to if the owner is incapacitated, which doesn't apply.
Okay. And here I don't think that there's a finding by the district court that the driver was incapacitated, so I don't think that there's...
No, but that it doesn't say driver incapacitated. It says owner, so we don't even think of that.
Yes.
But then we have the word or. It doesn't say and... if for any other reason, it says, or if for any other reason, the department finds it necessary.
Well, if the, let's give an example. Let's say that.
Thing, car is in the tree.
Okay.
And there's emergency vehicles and they're blocking traffic. I mean, I think there's a public safety issue because of that.
So Goodrich says that the driver has to be given the option. Rohde says that the driver has to be given the option. So if the towing policy is in conflict with those cases, that's based on the Fourth Amendment. That's not based on the towing policy. The towing policy plays a role in the discussion of whether something's constitutional, but the Supreme Court of Minnesota has said that when the driver is present at the scene and is not under arrest, that they have to be given the option of having the car towed. It does not say that if the driver is not from a certain area, most likely he has a cell phone because every single person on this planet at this point has a cell phone, that he would be able to do a Google search to find a towing company. He was not given the option, as those cases have said, are required when the driver's not under arrest. So even if the towing policy gives some indication, the towing policy is still bound by the Fourth Amendment. And I think that's directly in Goodrich that says impoundment must outweigh the Fourth Amendment right to be free from searches. So at least the first part of the impoundment policy said that the driver is supposed to be given the right. That was ignored here. Goodrich, Rohde say that the driver is supposed to be given the right. They essentially say that in Bertin, they distinguish Bertin, don't follow Bertin, and they provide additional rights to the persons of the United States or in Minnesota, and say that that the defendant is supposed to be given, or the person who's in the car is supposed to be given the right to have it towed, unless they're under arrest. And in Bertin, actually, the policy was more expansive than the one here because it allowed the officer the discretion not to give the driver the right.
So you would agree if the officer had just said, "Do you have a preference for a towing company?" You would not be here today, and he declined. If he declined.
Yes, I would not have an argument here. That's what's required under the Minnesota Constitution. That's what's required under this policy. And by failing to do that, Officer Murr, jumped right to an inventory search. She's on the scene for about 7 minutes. She doesn't try to call the owner to see if, you know, she makes this jump.
She didn't learn that until after the search anyway.
Correct. All that information is found out after the search. This question about whether or not he got the car from Nemo and what
that
the relationship.
After
the inventory search has taken place.
So what record evidence is there then? I mean, I thought I heard you say earlier in your argument that the police knew Mr. Walls wasn't the owner, but that's not enough.
Correct.
What evidence is of the record that gave the police that knowledge prior to commencing the inventory search?
Well, she has the insurance card in her hand at 11:06 of the video, and she has a conversation with the other officer at the scene at 11:31. What's that?
She had another. You mean when she says we're going to have to? She had the conversation was, they're not the owners. We're going to have to impound, or we're going to have to inventory.
Correct. That's the conversation at 11:11.
Basis for that knowledge in the record.
The basis on the knowledge is she knows Mr. Walls' name. She also has the insurance card that does not include Mr. Walls' name because she has that insurance card in front of her. And my understanding of the record is the reason she knows it's not his car and the reason she says that to the other officer is because she knows Jordan Walls doesn't match up with the name that's on the insurance card.
Because they hadn't received anything from they'd gotten a dispatch. I listened to I watched the video too.
Yep.
I mean, dispatch told them that Walls was revoked.
Yes.
And but there hadn't been a registration check on the car at that point.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
I mean, they don't talk about it on the video.
Yes,
anyway.
I wasn't able to pick that up from the video. Yes. The reason I'm making that conclusion is because I think it's pretty clear that if you have the insurance card in your possession and you know the name of the driver, and obviously those don't match up, that she would make that conclusion to the other officer that, and I think she thought, wrongly so, based on what the Hastings Police Department policy was and based on Supreme Court case law, that it was enough that he wasn't the owner of the vehicle and that justified taking possession of the car and conducting an inventory search. But she was wrong. And when you're wrong and it violates the Fourth Amendment, the result is suppression of the evidence. And here, because this was preserved under subdivision 4, and I can't remember the first part of that rule, it throws out all the convictions here because they were all covered under how they resolved this case in the district court.
So from your point of view, would it have mattered had the officers waited a short period of time until dispatch radioed back and said, registered owner is Catherine Langhoff or whoever it was? Would that have changed your analysis at all if they'd have been told that limited information before conducting the inventory?
That would have kept this case in line with Goodrich. Had they known from dispatch, which I think they pretty much knew anyways based on the insurance card, that he's not the owner of the vehicle, then that would be just in line with Goodrich, is that Goodrich was not the owner of the vehicle. And the officer guessed, as the officer here did too, that being the owner of the vehicle means that it might be stolen. But Goodrich, the court in Goodrich specifically says that's not enough. You can't just guess that the car's stolen just because you're not the owner of the vehicle.
That wasn't articulated here. I mean, the video clearly showed they didn't have that knowledge before the search.
I think there is information that they had the knowledge he's not the owner of the vehicle based on her possession of the insurance card and her conversation with the officer right before the inventory where she says they're not the owner of the vehicle. So even though she hasn't received the definitive response from dispatch, I think she knows based on knowing his name and having the insurance card that he's not the owner of the vehicle. But again, that's not a problem in our case because of Goodrich.
So in this case, at the point when the officer decided to impound the vehicle, the officer knew who had been driving, there'd been this accident, and the driver wasn't the owner of the car.
Correct. She didn't have any information that would have provided her with arresting Mr. Walls at that point, which again makes this case similar to Rohde and Goodrich and I believe Gelster. In all those cases, there's not an arrestable offense. I think in Bertin, that person actually is arrested, so that case is very different from the case here. So if you don't have information that makes somebody arrestable, the only information you have is that the person isn't the owner of the vehicle. Goodrich says that that's not enough to believe that the car is stolen, and then at that point, you have to give the driver the option of towing the vehicle themselves, and that's consistent with the policy, but overriding here is the Fourth Amendment and what's said in Goodrich and Gelster and Rohde. Unless the court has additional questions, I'll plan on potentially responding in rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. For the state?
Good morning. My name is Heather Pipenhagen, and I am an assistant Dakota County attorney. I'm here on behalf of the respondent, the state of Minnesota. And I guess the first thing I want to point out is the obvious, and that it would be a lot easier for this panel to affirm the district court's order if I could point you to something in the record that was consistent with the court's finding that dispatch advised that this vehicle had been reported stolen. The prosecutor in this case argued that in his memorandum. The district court found that in her final order. I watched every body cam, and I couldn't find anything in the radio transmissions that supported that. So I have to concede that the court's findings on that issue and that issue alone, it appears were erroneous. Obviously, if the panel finds it fantastic when you review the record, I didn't see it. Nevertheless,
that issue alone or also...
I'm sorry.
I think we're saying the same question. What about the registration? That wasn't until later after the search was conducted. Would you concede that too?
And so to that point, and if I'm understanding or heard appellant's argument correctly, what he's actually saying is this inventory search would have been fine if it started 3 or 4 minutes later. And I find that interesting. And so our argument is that the officer decided to tow this vehicle or towed this vehicle was reasonable to tow this vehicle because as she testified a couple of times, I think most clearly on page 37 of the transcript, she suspected that Mr. Walls did not have permission to have this vehicle. She
that wasn't articulated. It wasn't, I mean, there was not, the testimony wasn't there. She, in fact, she kind of discounted any reason to have the darn vehicle impounded anyway and said there, the officer testifies and says it's not a traffic hazard. I watched the video and I'd be surprised that that wasn't a traffic hazard. Of course, that was the sworn testimony.
She did, but on page, there was an earlier point where she says it was a concern, but then I think she says it more clearly on page 37 of her testimony. The prosecutor asked her, did you suspect that they did not have permission to have the vehicle at that point? And the officer says, yes, I did. So clearly,
based on what?
On
in the record.
Several things. First of all, I think we all agree she knew he wasn't the registered owner. The insurance card was in somebody else's name. So he initially kind of mumbles what I believe and the court believes is the word mine when she asks whose the vehicle is when she very first approaches him. And then she finds an insurance card that's in somebody else's name. Now, she may have erroneously started a search of the car at that point, thinking...
Well, that's the whole argument, is she started the search too soon, and she should have continued investigating or ferreting out necessary facts.
Correct. He's not the owner, or, you know... And I think appellant agreed on page 9, nobody's saying this car didn't need to be towed immediately. It's on private property, it was on a utility box, on a tree. It had to get out of there, it had to get out of there now. So there's no dispute about that. So... the question is, does he tow it or do they tow it? So she finds out right away he's not the registered owner, despite the fact that he seemed to indicate that he was the owner of the vehicle. She kind of starts a cursory search. That is correct. She had already made up her mind. I'm not disputing that. She then goes to the ambulance, if I recall the chronology exactly. She goes to the ambulance to get gloves because she
needs... we don't know that. The body cam was turned off. I mean, we know she went... looked like she talked to a witness, and she went to the responder.
Correct, and came out, I believe, holding the gloves, and she starts to do the search of the car.
What did she know at the time of the search?
And that is when, right there, she asked for... she ran the plate, and she asked dispatch who the registered owner was, came back again confirming that it was not him, and then she
didn't get information from the plate. That didn't come back.
On the video, she reads the plate to dispatch.
Right, but she doesn't have the response yet.
And then a couple minutes later, dispatch gives her the information, and it's about 10 minutes after she had gotten there. It's at, I believe, 11:15 versus 11:05 when she arrived. That is when she and the other officer had separate conversations. The other officer went and had the first conversation with Mr. Walls and came back and reported to her. He says he got the vehicle from someone named Nemo, who was obviously not the registered owner. And then one of the two officers talks to him further, and he admits that he doesn't even know the registered owner. He doesn't even know Nemo's full name. Nemo's from Minneapolis. The registered owner...
about Fourth Amendment rights. I mean, even if she had let him pick who would tow the vehicle, the investigation could have continued and a search warrant obtained to search the vehicle. I mean, we're talking about a Fourth Amendment protection here.
Correct. And again, my argument is having all the information that she had at that point, which I concede was...
But what information did she have before she did what you call the cursory search? And what do you mean by the cursory search?
She hadn't found any of the evidence that any of the...
Did she go to the car and start to search it?
Yes.
What did she know at that point?
At that point, she knew he was not the registered owner. He first said the vehicle was his, and then she finds out he's not the registered owner. So she decides that the car, they're going to tow the car rather than have him tow the car. And I think it's important.
So would you then state that the or for any other reason is when you find out that the driver is not the registered owner, that gives you the ability to impound a car?
I guess to simplify what I'm trying to say is when she started the search, I don't think she had enough.
Well, then isn't that the problem?
She got enough information a few minutes later. Again, I think it's after they'd been there for 10 minutes when all these pieces come in that...
Doesn't the case law say you can't use the fruits of an illegal search to justify the search or justify the arrest? I mean, it sounds like that's what you're asking us to do. She didn't have enough when she started the search, but then she got more information, so the search is okay.
You can't use illegal fruits of the search, but the additional information was the additional information she got from the driver, from Mr. Walls, about the fact that he didn't even know Nemo's name.
What you're arguing that, yes, she did a cursory search, and at that time she probably didn't have enough, but she didn't find anything, so it doesn't really matter. At the point when she did a search that resulted in incriminating evidence, she knew that he may have mumbled that the car was his and it actually wasn't, and that he claimed to have gotten the car from somebody named Nemo. He couldn't provide information about Nemo, and Nemo was not the registered owner.
What I'm saying is I think she started that inventory search too early, but I think just moments in, she did have enough information that made it reasonable for her to impound.
And what was the information? Just list it without an argument, please.
Yep, that reasonable information was the person he got the vehicle from was not the registered owner.
Okay.
It's somebody named Nemo from Minneapolis. He can't even provide that person's full name, if it's even a real name. And he admitted that he doesn't even know the registered owner. So there's no way for him to contact the registered owner to get information about what should be done with the vehicle. There's no way for anybody to contact the registered owner to decide how the registered owner wants to handle the vehicle, because he doesn't even know the registered owner, doesn't have the registered owner's permission.
The towing policy doesn't require contacting the owner.
Correct. The towing policy says that they should give them the opportunity to make their own arrangements. In other words, keep custody of that car and take it with them if it's reasonable to do so. And my argument is, based on her concerns about whether or not he even had permission to have that car and whether or not the owner even knew that he had it, I don't think it was reasonable for her to then just turn that vehicle back over to him and let him keep it. And that is about
letting him keep it. It was towing it
to wherever, towing it to his house, towing it to an impound lot, towing it to someone else's house, towing it to.
In the meantime, while you're waiting for the tow truck, she's still gathering information.
Correct. And I think she did get enough information to have justified that tow by the time the tow occurred. What I have to agree is that she started that search before she had gathered all the information that gave her all of the red flags that she ultimately had to say, I don't think this guy's supposed to have this car, and I don't think I should be letting him keep this car.
I think that's what we're struggling with here, is the underlying record is, I think the timing of what occurred, what she knew, and when it occurred is critical. Mm-hmm. We didn't hear from any officer other than Officer Muir. So we don't know when this other officer got this information about Nemo. There's no mention on the body cam video of anything about Nemo. How do we know, and how did the trial court know that then? Am I wrong that the record here is the officer's testimony, the body cam video, and the policy?
There were, I believe, 7 body cam videos. And there was a stipulation, it says the videos of the search. Mm-hmm. And I think you could say, oh, is that just Officer Murr's body cam? But it's not. It's body cam number 2 is the male officer's body cam. That's the male that got all the information about Nemo. And you can see it on his camera. He immediately walks over and tells her. So we know exactly at what point in the search they realized this whole situation is fishy. Let's just not, this whole, which confirmed to be correct,
why
he didn't
not
have.
Get a warrant to freeze the scene and search the car? If you're saying if it was fishy enough to justify a search, would this have justified a warrant application?
What was the urgency? That's what I'm getting at. We saw the video. The vehicle, although I think it was a little bit of a traffic hazard, it wasn't on the street. It was in the tree.
It wasn't on the street, but they indicated he ran over a utility box. It was in a tree. It's on private property.
But what was the urgency?
I can't say that there was urgency, except for that it's on private property, and I think everybody agrees it needed to be removed. Could they have gotten a warrant? They probably could have. At that point, I don't know if they had probable cause of a crime.
All they had was a careless and a DAR at that point.
Correct.
But if they don't have, what I'm struggling with is, if they don't have probable cause to believe the vehicle is stolen such that they could get a warrant to seize the vehicle, then why are we letting them take it for an inventory search?
I think it comes down to that, was it is the reasonableness of the officer's decision. Was it reasonable for her?
The policy doesn't say the officer shall have the driver select a towing company if the officer thinks that's reasonable. It says if reasonably possible.
Correct.
Is it reasonably possible for the officer to say, do you want to select a towing company?
You're
reading reasonably much different, I think, than the way it's used here. You're using more of a general Fourth Amendment reasonable gloss where this just says, if reasonably possible.
I think it would. There's an argument that it's unreasonable. With the concern she had at that point about whether or not he was even supposed to have that car, is it reasonable for her to then?
What you're saying, and it's reasonable, is it reasonable to follow this policy under these circumstances is different than,
correct,
is it reasonably possible for the officer to offer the driver the opportunity to tow the vehicle? They're two different things, right?
Sure, sure. And again, that's the policy. I think under the law, I don't know how the officer was interpreting
the
policy.
Thing. If we're going under the automobile, or if we're going under the inventory exception, the law is pretty clear. First and foremost, you have to comply with the policy. Otherwise, it's not reasonable. And here we have a policy, and it looks like there wasn't compliance. If you can point to some other exception and say, well, here's another exception that justifies this search.
I can't. And I think...
Do you see that's the problem?
Correct. And I think in the officer's mind, it was because she clearly didn't think he was supposed to have this car. And she didn't think it was reasonable to have him then make arrangements for the tow.
And I think all of that's reasonable.
Correct.
But we have this policy that says something else is supposed to happen. The policy doesn't make allowance for these circumstances where, well, this is the policy unless the officer suspects this, that, or the other.
And
it doesn't seem that the officer was acting unreasonably, but it does not appear that the officer acted consistently with the policy, which is what the Fourth Amendment requires for application of this exception.
I think the distinction between which way you're interpreting that policy really simply comes down to that word able. If it's reasonable to do so or reasonably able to do so. I mean, certainly she was physically able to ask him if he wanted to make arrangements for the tow. Was it reasonable to do so when she's not even certain that he even should have this car? That's where our position is.
Okay, but where does this towing policy state that standard, state that sort of, at the end of the day, the officer gets to decide whether or not it's reasonable to offer.
I don't think the policy says it in that way. It just says reasonably able to do so. And like I said, is she able? Certainly. Is it reasonable for her to do so at this point? I don't think she was going to turn that car back over to him based on her concerns. And that gets to the two different purposes of taking the car into custody to begin with. There's the, you know, public safety, get it out of the middle of the road, keep other people from getting hurt or being a hazard, or protect the property and protect the police department from claims. And that's really where this falls is she, in her, you know, and logically, and she's in a position where she's not sure he's supposed to have this car.
Yeah, and what if the owner sues the police
She doesn't
department.
Have any way to get a hold of the registered owner. She doesn't have any way to call the registered owner because he doesn't even know the registered owner. We can't make other arrangements with the owner. And
although,
if they release it,
they could have waited.
They might have got it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean,
if they waited 5 minutes, they might have gotten from dispatch, Catherine Langhoff is a registered owner. Here's her address and phone number.
Contact her before you do an inventory search.
And addresses certainly would be listed under the registered owner. I don't believe there's any provision for phone numbers.
Not,
but an address,
the police
it would be
can
great.
Find a phone number.
If he could give him a phone number, it would be great. But again, he doesn't even know the registered owner. So that I think that's a big problem. And then you have the possibility of the registered owner coming back on the department because they had her car and they turned it back over to the person who didn't have permission to have it. I think that's where it becomes unreasonable. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just quickly, this is cited in my brief, and I guess I didn't totally understand the state is making this argument that somehow they had this additional information that they gain after the start of the search can somehow be used to justify the search after the fact. But State v. Hatton, which is a Court of Appeals opinion, and I don't have the exact cite in front of me, State v. Hatton says you determine whether or not a search is good or bad based at the time the search begins. And you don't get to use information gained afterwards after the search has already commenced in order to justify it. And I think either Goodrich or Gouster, one of those cases, talks about the state kind of coming up with new arguments in the appeal that they didn't raise below in order to try to justify the search, and I think that's what they're doing here. But State v. Hatton is very clear that you go from the time, which I think the state has conceded, that at the time that the inventory search started, they did not have enough information to justify inventory and impoundment of the vehicle.
So do we look at that subjectively, what the officers think they thought they knew at that time, or can we look at it objectively based on the record? And what I'm getting at is 11 in the morning, the officers come on a scene, a car is sideswiped, a vehicle on the street, veers over, crosses a curb, mows down a utility box, smashes into a pine tree, and now it's on, I mean, that's going to raise a lot of red flags, just that driving conduct alone. Next, they get up to the vehicle. Mr. Walls is leaning back. He sounds like he's mumbling to me on the body camera. Sounds like he might say the vehicle's mine. That's what the judge thought. The passenger is making no sense. She's mumbling. She's talking incoherently. I agree with Judge Larkin's comment that this officer reasonably had some suspicion here about that something funny was going on. So can we look at the objective facts of what they might objectively show as opposed to, you said it was an inventory based on the information you had here, so you're stuck with that. See what I'm getting at?
Well, I agree that I think in most situations like this, you are supposed to look at the objective facts. I don't know that there is a sideswipe of a car or a crossing of a median. I think he just runs immediately off the road and into the tree and hits the utility thing. I think his conversation, at least at the beginning, is pretty understandable. The one part that we don't have is the part where she asks him, whose car is this? And that actually is included in the state's memorandum below, in the same way that the state also argues in the memorandum below that the cop knew that the car wasn't supposed to be in his possession, which we know is information gained later. The judge adopts both those findings. Both those findings are wrong. But the one thing I wanted to...
I think the chart erred when it said, I heard her ask him on there, whose vehicle is this? And the judge makes a finding that he said, mine. You can hear... Rrr.
Yeah, I think it's clear error, and the cop testified at that hearing. She never once says that he flip-flopped and went back and forth on who owned the car. The only thing she says is this NEMO information. And we do know that when she does say something right before inventorying the car, she says, I know he's not the owner. She doesn't say, he lied to me at the beginning, and now I know he's not the owner. The other thing is the thing about the cop's belief about the car potentially being stolen. It's not enough there based on the objective facts on Goodrich, but we also, that's information she says at the end of a hearing where she's talked about all the information she's gained over this entire time period. When she actually is talking to the other officer, she's very honest and says, I'm going to inventory it because he's not the owner. She does not say, I'm going to inventory this car because he's not the owner and it's probably stolen. She would have no reason not to be honest with the other officer there. The only time she makes that statement is at the end of a hearing where she's talking about all the facts that she gained. But Hatton says you have to look at the time that the inventory search starts. And here, at the time the inventory search starts, based on the state's concession in their argument, is that there's not enough to justify an inventory.
Didn't know about NEMO at that point.
Correct.
But nothing was found at that point.
Well, I think there actually is information. Because this exact argument isn't totally made in the brief, I think there is some drug paraphernalia or something found in the car. I think there's a reason they go over because they're like, oh, there's some bad stuff in this car. Let's go get some more information. Maybe we can get some statements from him that link him to these bad things that are found in the car. So I wouldn't agree that nothing had been found. There's a reason she goes to talk to him. Thank you. We would ask for a reversal of Mr. Walls' convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the arguments. The case is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days as required by statute. That concludes the court's oral arguments this morning.
All rise. All rise.